Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots to talk about in the next hour or so. Plus, you can call us with your questions, 888-302-3684. That's our number. And one of the continual themes on this program, you know, why listen to this program after all, when there are so many health reports out there? You can click on cable news, or you can listen to the radio, or you can go online, and there's all kinds of health reports. The New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, all the national papers bombard you with health information. So why, I mean, unless it's a busman's holiday for you, you want to get even more health information, why go to this source as your trusted source for health information? Well, one of the reasons is that health information these days is a commodity. It's something that is spread like, well, sort of like manure over a field, and it is often wrong. And the messages that we're sending out to people are often sponsored by the drug industry, or often dumbed down for public consumption, or often just plain wrong, or they may reflect an ideological bias of one kind or another, or they just represent a misinterpretation of some kind of study result. And that's why you may listen to this program even after hearing a health report, a celebrity who has a medical condition like Angelina Jolie, who recently chose to have both breasts removed and now plans to have her ovaries removed. These are stories that are broadcast sometimes uncritically, and you may want to get our critical perspective on stories like that. All right. Well, this week is no exception, because we have seen headlines to this effect. Nature World News reported, red meat ups breast cancer risk. The Daily Express in Great Britain made a statement of fact. Red meat raises the risk of breast cancer by a quarter. Fox News in Philadelphia stated, red meat may raise breast cancer risk. And on it goes. And so let's take a look at this particular story, and let's take a look also at what it represents in the sphere of health reporting. Okay, this comes to us from WebMD, which is a little more trusted and reliable and reasonable source. Women who ate the most red meat increased their risk for breast cancer by nearly 25%. This, according to a 20-year study of nearly 89,000 women, suggests. On the flip side, however, replacing a daily serving of red meat with a combination of fish, legumes, nuts, and poultry appeared to lower the risk of breast cancer by 14%. And on it goes. Cutting down processed meat, limiting intake of red meat, and substituting a combo of poultry, fish, legumes, and nuts as protein sources during early life seems beneficial for the prevention of breast cancer, according to the lead researcher of the study, Miriam Farvid. She is with the Harvard School of Public Health's Department of Nutrition. So drilling down, we find that compared with women who had one serving of red meat a week, those who ate 1.5 servings a day appeared to have a 22% higher risk of breast cancer. And each additional daily serving of red meat seemed to increase the risk of breast cancer by another 13%. And so, you know, you're going to get headlines that inevitably pass along the public health message that red meat is a causative factor for breast cancer. Well, a little later in the program, we're going to talk about a study that is one of the first studies that differentiates between meat consumption overall, or red meat consumption overall, because we have to distinguish between the so-called white meats and red meat. Red meat is often fingered as the culprit, but red meat actually comprises both steak and whole cuts of meat, as well as processed meats. And so one of the criticisms of many of these studies is when they say red meat, what are you talking about? You're talking about you know, Oscar Mayer bologna or luncheon meat? Or are you talking about prime steak that may not have any additives? Are you talking about a certain cooking style, such as deep frying or broiling or grilling? What precisely is the factor? Is it the hormones, the antibiotics, the additives, the nitrites that are present in things like bacon, for example? Many of the studies do not differentiate that. But the headline in this website, BMJ news release on red meat and breast cancer may have misled reporters again. And the point in this criticism is that there's a big difference between what are called observational studies and double-blind placebo-controlled studies or prospective studies. Prospective study means, okay, let's take a group of people, we'll divide them in half, and we'll feed one group one kind of thing, and we'll feed the other group another kind of thing. And that's what's called a prospective study, which is a lot more reliable than studies that are observational or rely on recall, which is invariably poor. Plus, we have the problem of, and you've heard me say this before, correlation is not necessarily causation. So it may be that women who eat a lot of red meat do other bad things that increase their risk of breast cancer. They may have a tendency to consume more junk overall. And after all, the message has gotten out that red meat, not so healthy for you. So health-conscious individuals are eating more vegetables and eating more natural foods. And perhaps they're exercising more, taking better care of themselves, optimizing their weight. So sometimes it's very hard to separate a single factor like red meat. Red meat consumption may be a marker for bad health behaviors overall. It's simply correlation, but not necessarily causation. And so, you know, some of the comments on this article are interesting. A guy posts a comment here saying, we have known for around 3,500 years that correlation does not equal causation, but the word seems to be very slow to get to medical schools. One problem is that much of the sort of research is commissioned or done by MDs with no further credentials. Medical doctors have absolutely no training or skills for designing, conducting, or evaluating these sorts of studies, and they're easily misled by their own data as a result. Another commenter writes, do journalists or journals get paid per click or article view? Because if so, I could see this problem continuing for eternity, because their motives will be to create the most stirring headlines, even if they're false or misleading. So now I turn to a study of media coverage in medical journals. And the title of this is, do the best articles make the news? And the answer is a resounding no. News coverage of medical research affects the practice of medicine and influence of science and influences scientific research. They looked at 75 journal articles that got coverage in the top five newspapers. And what they found was that newspapers were more likely to cover observational studies, studies like, oh, red meat is associated with or seems but doesn't necessarily cause breast cancer. They are less likely to cover randomized controlled trials than high-impact journals. Additionally, when the media does cover observational studies, they select articles of inferior quality. Newspapers preferentially cover medical research with weaker methodology. So, again, what floats to the top? Well, in a sewer, use your imagination. What generally floats to the top is not necessarily the most quality material. And, oh, by the way, this self-same week where they're touting headlines of red meat as the causative factor in breast cancer, this story, limiting carbs could reduce breast cancer recurrence in women. And this is actually a better study because, well, yeah, they did look at diet and they asked people what they consumed. And, yes, that's observational and correlation isn't necessarily causation. But they also added to the strength of the study by looking at what are called IGF-1 receptors in breast tumor tissue. We know that IGF-1, or insulin-like growth factor, is something that promotes tumor growth. And insulin, yeah, insulin has a lot to do with carbohydrate intake. So IGF-1 receptors that were positive in the breast biopsies of women who had breast cancer, those who had IGF-1 receptors, they had a higher risk of recurrence when they consumed more carbohydrates overall. And they didn't necessarily distinguish between high glycemic and low glycemic carbohydrates. It was just overall carbohydrates. So whole grain pasta, the same as soda in this particular study in terms of scoring carbohydrate effects on breast cancer. So the controversy will continue. Should you become a dedicated vegan to avoid the risk of breast cancer, avoid red meat altogether? Not clear from these studies, although these studies do get a lot of attention. We'll try to straighten things out for you a little more with a study that distinguishes between overall red meat consumption and different subtypes of red meat. Red meat that is processed versus red meat that is whole cuts, in a study that looks at stroke in just a moment. Meanwhile, you can call us 888-302-3684. We're here to straighten out matters related to medicine on this program. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Taking an omega-3 has become part of my daily routine, but I did have some concerns about the environment and, quite frankly, the occasional fishy burp back. So I looked around and discovered a new eco-friendly and vegetarian alternative to fish oil, Chia Omega. While it's no secret growing older can be a challenge, my doctor stresses the importance of omega-3s in helping to achieve and maintain a healthy lifestyle throughout all the stages of my life. I discovered that many health experts encourage supplementation with omega-3s to help support cardiovascular health, joint comfort, and healthy cognition. Chia Omega is a high-quality, all-natural, plant-based line of supplements made from chia seed oil. Chia seeds are the richest and most sustainable natural sources of ALA omega-3 on the planet, containing even more than fish or flax. Having choices concerning my health and making a conscientious change benefiting the environment feels empowering. That's why I switched to Chia Omega. You can get essential formulas Chia Omega at Vitamin Shoppe and other fine health food stores everywhere.
At Nordic Naturals, we pioneer new ways to help people get premium omega-3 nutrition while maintaining the highest standards of safety, quality, and sustainability. Nordic Naturals sources its fish from some of the cleanest waters on Earth and selects only flourishing species that are naturally low in toxins and high in omega-3s. During production, every batch of fish oil used in our products is third-party tested to ensure that they meet international omega-3 industry standards for purity, using methods established by the World Health Organization. At Nordic Naturals, what's essential to us is simple. It's what's essential to you. Like us on Facebook and share your What's Essential story, or simply visit NordicNaturals.com for free samples. Nordic Naturals is available at finer health stores nationwide. Nordic Naturals, committed to delivering the world's safest, most effective omega oils.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine, and we have callers. Yes, indeed we do. 888-302-3684 is our number. We got Lisa from Cathedral City, California. Hi, Lisa. How you doing? Lisa's from Cathedral City. That's reminiscent of the song by Guns N' Roses, which is Paradise City, right? Take me down to Cathedral City where the grass is green and the girls are pretty. You know that song?
Yes, I do.
You do? Okay. You've already been teased about that in the past, I'm sure. Okay.
We'll lay some off other one person before.
Oh, okay. So I'm not that original.
No, right, you're not.
What's your question?
Okay. What is better for our bodies to process, stevia or agave? I'm a scratch baker, and I'd like to kind of get that question out there because there's many people with different views on both. So,
well, that's
what
you say. You say you're a scratch baker. I'm not even sure what a scratch baker is, but does that mean you're gluten intolerant, and when you eat your own baked goods, you start to have bodily itches?
Oh my gosh, no.
What is a scratch baker?
I do everything but from scratch, and
oh, right.
I have a business, doing designer cookies, and
excellent.
That's one of the that's one of the things that I'm getting questioned on. I have a recipe for both,
right?
But I need to get that clarified, or if there's even going to be any clarification on it. There's
okay, so yeah, I don't know that much about baking, but I'll tell you.
Oh,
by the way, the different sweeteners have different characteristics in baking. So sugar, as you know, it caramelizes and it has certain effects in baking. And certain sweeteners, they may impart a sweet taste, but they don't have the same, you know, physical characteristics. So cooking is really, it's like a form of chemistry, and you really have to understand chemistry when you add ingredients to foods. You try to substitute one ingredient for another. Instead of getting a nice fluffy cake, you might get like a pancake, you know, or a cracker, just because of, you know, how it interacts with the other ingredients. So agave is it's actually a sugar. And, you know, you could take virtually any carbohydrate, any starch, and you can render it into sugar. I mean, and then you ultimately render into alcohol. That's why there's so many different types of alcohols, grain alcohols, potato alcohols. There's cactus alcohols like tequila. And agave is made from, I guess it's made from the century plant, or one of these succulent plants in the desert. And it will, if you render that down, it will make sugar. So, yeah, I mean, maybe that sounds more natural or holistic or granola than cane sugar or high fructose corn syrup. But actually, the fructose content of agave is wicked high. And it's really sort of a calorie bomb. So from a flavor standpoint, taste characteristics, maybe that's great. But from a nutritional standpoint, you know, is it good for you to consume a lot of agave? Is it a free pass? That's illusory. That is, to me, one of the biggest hypes in the natural foods business is this thing with agave syrup. You know, yeah, it's natural. But so is, you know, arsenic's natural.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So,
that's right.
So, but stevia is not, it's not really a sugar. It's a sweetener, and it may not have the same physical characteristics in your baked goods. Plus, stevia on its own is kind of sour tasting. It's super sweet. But it ultimately gives you sort of a cloying taste on your taste buds. That's why they've combined it with triolose in a product called Truvia as the commercial iteration of stevia. You'll see it as a sweetener in, you know, even the big food companies are now making Truvia using
it
as the quote natural
in
food.
It.
Right, erythritol, yes, which is a sugar alcohol. And that sort of takes the edge off the stevia. But, you know, it depends on what you're making. You know, stevia, I think, is good in beverages. I'm not sure that it's that good in baked goods. You might consider xylitol as a sweetener in baked goods. I hear it has good characteristics in baking. But, again, you got to watch out for these sugar alcohols, because you take too much of those things and you will get a gastrointestinal. Yes. Yes, you will get a gastrointestinal hurry-up effect. Which is, for some people, that's okay. They need that. But for other people, too many of their cupcakes is going to produce an undesirable result.
Well, that's why I avoid that. But I guess my concern is the health benefits, you know, the health issues with using the agave. Yeah. I know the stevia, from what I've read, is very, there's no ill effects.
Yes, exactly.
But then again, long term, I don't know. I don't think there's anything. But again, it's that bitter aftertaste that I don't like. And I know that
from a flavor standpoint, it's not that good. Do you make any gluten free products?
Yes,
do you ever
I do.
Tackle that? Yeah, that's whole art in itself, and that's really coming up. And I think you're going to, you know, certainly you will find your products in demand, because this is a big movement going forward. A lot of people intolerant to gluten, and it makes a difference. So, hey, thanks very much for calling. Thanks for listening. Check out our newsletter. Subscribe. Go to drhoffman.com and find out more. Thanks, Lisa, for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about, different types of red meat, the processed kind versus the whole meat slices. And whether it makes a difference in terms of stroke risk. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System. A complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh.
Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
DrHoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 if you're desirous of getting your question answered. And the debate continues to rage about optimal diet. A new book is out by Nina Teicholz. We'll be interviewing her later this month. It's called A Big Fat Surprise. And the book is being greeted with both enthusiasm and skepticism, depending on which side of the diet argument you fall on. A lot of people are saying that it's high time that we debunk the myth of the low-fat diet. And that book certainly demolishes that myth. Others are saying, well, she's done a disservice because she seems to endorse the intake of saturated fat and cholesterol, which for some people could be very deleterious. They'll be off to the races consuming lots of bacon and lots of cheese and fatty omelets and thus putting themselves at risk. Well, there's a new study that helps us to discern what the real deal is on red meat. Now, red meat, very controversial because for a long time, people have felt guilty about eating red meat. Red meat was stigmatized starting in the 1960s and 70s. And so sometimes when I ask patients about their diets, they will guiltily admit, well, I eat a little red meat, but I'm trying to cut down, as if that were the sine qua non of nutritional excellence, the apex of good dietary conduct, avoiding red meat. So this new study is actually one of the first studies that differentiates between processed meat and less processed cuts of red meat. The participants answered questions about diet and lifestyle. Processed meat questions dealt with consumption of sausages, cold cuts, either ham or salami, blood pudding, I guess it's done in England, sausages, and liver pate over the last year. Unprocessed meat questions covered pork and beef, veal, including hamburger, ground meat, and, of course, steak. That's why the headline was generated, steak is better for you than hot dogs or salami. And what they found was that no association was found between unprocessed red meat, such as beef or pork, and the risk of heart failure. But men who ate roughly 2.5 ounces a day of processed red meats had a 28% higher risk of heart failure and more than twice the risk of death from heart failure compared with men who ate less than 1 ounce of processed meat daily. So the study suggests that it is the processing of red meat that is a concern. And this kind of squares with the worldview of the Paleolithic diet folks who believe that man's early ancestors consumed lots of meat in the form of protein, much of it red, and that in those days there weren't no Oscar Mayer lunch meats or processed breakfast sausages, and it is via the processing that we run into trouble. Unfortunately, no study to date has examined the differential effects of grass-fed meats versus conventionally corn-fed meats, because the actual composition of the meats, when you're consuming domesticated beef and pork these days, you're not getting something that mirrors the fatty acid composition of the meats that our ancestors ate. Even recently, even, you know, going back to, say, the mid-19th century. We only began to corn feed our beef in the 19th century. Certainly in the 20th century, we started to have feedlots. But before then, cattle grazed on grass, and then there was the annual cattle drive memorialized in so many Western movies. And that's how grass were fed. Their fat composition more resembles the fat composition that's derived from grass, which is higher in omega-3 fatty acids, lower in omega-6 fatty acids, and overall more healthy than corn-fed animals. That study has not been done yet, but so far this new study vindicates just plain old red meats that have not been processed. All right, here's another one that relates to stroke risk. Eat protein to lower stroke risk. Subtitle is, eating as little as one chicken breast or salmon fillet every day can reduce the risk of stroke by 20%. Now, interestingly, in the study, this study kind of goes against the vegetarian credo, which is avoid animal protein altogether, and you will lower your risk of vascular disease, stroke being the second most common vascular disease. There's a possibility that you may increase your risk of heart attack and reduce your risk of stroke with a lot of protein. But that's not that likely, because generally they track together. What they do say in this study, however, is that people should avoid red meat, which has been associated with increased stroke risk, because in this particular study, eating more red meat was not associated with protection. But then again, in this study, the red meat wasn't broken down. They didn't break it down into, is it red meat from a bologna, or is it red meat from filet mignon? So the amount of protein that led to reduced risk of stroke was moderate, just 20 grams a day. But keep in mind that many older folks, those who are particularly susceptible to stroke, tend to skimp sometimes on healthy protein. They gravitate towards starchy foods, sweet foods, and sometimes because of budgetary constraints, they can't purchase healthy things like chicken breast or salmon, or, you know, have the wherewithal to prepare them on a daily basis. So interesting studies that I think ultimately vindicate the role of animal protein on the risk of, in one case, heart disease, and in the other case, stroke. And more, this controversy will rage on, I can guarantee you, virtually forever. But we'll try and shed more light on it with an upcoming podcast with Nina Teicholz, author of A Big Fat Surprise. That's coming up this month, and we'll feature it at drhoffman.com. You can listen to our podcasts via your computer or mobile device. Lots more content each week, in addition to the content we provide you via this radio show. Find it at drhoffman.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
If you're like me, balancing my blood sugar is important to me for my health and wellness, especially as I get older. I pay attention to what I eat and try to exercise daily, but even that might not be enough. So each day I take Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance in conjunction with a healthy diet, regular exercise, and plenty of rest. Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is my trusted ally for healthy weight management, overall cardiovascular health, and immune function. Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is a synergistic combination of odorless kyolic aged garlic extract and herbs and nutrients shown to help maintain blood sugar levels. And it's made by our friends at Kyolic, the number one best-selling odorless garlic supplement on the market for over 40 years. So join the Kyolic team. I did.
Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is available at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, updated several times weekly. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I want to wish all you dads out there a very happy Father's Day. And you got to be acknowledged sometimes because, we just had Mom's Day. Now we've got Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to all you dads. And now that, everybody's so concerned about meat and the hazards and, there's things about recalls of tainted meat, you might be tempted to just chuck the meat altogether and go for a vegan or vegetarian diet. And one of the mainstays of the vegetarian diet or vegan diet is chia seeds. Chia seeds can be offered as powders, or you could take the whole seeds. Remember the chia pets? This exact same seed. They used to be used as the chia pets. You'd sprinkle water on them. They would grow. You'd have like a little clay figure of Abraham Lincoln, and he'd grow a beard, or some chia animal. The self same chia turns out to be very high in protein, and it contains essential fatty acids, particularly omega-3 fatty acids. So it's good stuff. The only problem is that this week the Centers for Disease Control has issued an alert for a salmonella outbreak linked to chia seed powders. Just talking to our audio engineer, Al, and Al, he's not a sandal-wearing, tie-dyed T-shirt type dude, but he is a health-conscious individual. And he is an avid consumer of chia seed. So, Engineer Al, do you consume chia powders?
Powders, no, just the seeds.
Just the seeds?
Yeah, I've never tried the powders.
You never tried the powders? So how you feeling? You feeling okay?
Yeah, alert. I can't tell what it is that I eat that gives me credit for my feeling, but yeah, it's just part of the equation, and it does feel good.
Okay, that's good, because should you have the irresistible impulse, I'll flip back to you after, for a break and be like, Al, are you there? Time for a commercial. It's like, where are you? We will know that you have fallen victim to the latest salmonella outbreak linked to chia seed powders.
Salmonella,
which is serious,
really?
Debilitating diarrhea, which can be, sometimes is self-limited and, it's just unpleasant. It's like a traveler's diarrhea. However, individuals who are immunosuppressed, who are taking medication that suppresses the immune system, many organ transplant recipients, people who have rheumatoid arthritis, ulcerative colitis, multiple sclerosis, people taking immune suppressive meds for their conditions, they may be more prone to serious or even life-threatening consequences from a salmonella infection. Also, there's a fairly high number of Americans who no longer have a spleen. They have had a splenectomy. This is sometimes due to an automobile accident, which ruptures the spleen. The spleen can't be sewn up again, so they just take it out. And you can live without a spleen. It's just an immune organ. And when it comes to certain types of infections, they can become very serious if you don't have a spleen. And so the CDC reports that 21 people in 12 states have been sickened by the salmonella outbreak. So it's not rampant, but, significant number of people. In Canada, the number is more like 36. Investigators are focusing their efforts on chia seed powder products. Now, not all chia seed is involved, and you can consult the Centers for Disease Control website. One company that was fingered in an original voluntary recall this May is Navitas Naturals. Navitas Naturals. Their products include a smoothie mix and an organic sprouted chia powder. Chia, by the way, rich in protein. So, you know, if you're looking for a natural protein source, which is totally vegan, chia would fit the bill, but you got to be careful these days. Health Matters America, Inc., and Organic Traditions has expanded their recall of chia products. And so they're on top of it, and they're trying to get the message out to consumers. Consumers who have chia powder in their pantries can check the CDC website for the retail products, as well as the sizes, UPC codes, and the best buy dates. So if you're suffering from consequences, you think you might be linked to this chia outbreak, notify the local health department because they're tracing this, and you can aid their investigation by identifying your use of chia powder with a possible salmonella infection. Yeah, at some point, I mean, even sprouts, you know, have salmonella. We tend to think of salmonella as something you get from if you don't clean off the cutting board after chopping some chicken. Chicken, you know, very, very commonly infected with salmonella. So you have to be very careful handling raw chicken, clean off your cutting boards, clean off kitchen surfaces. But in this case, chia seed is also a potential source. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
For more Intelligent Medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. By now, across the country, the sun is bright, and lots of people are getting out there tanning. Maybe some are experiencing their first summer burn because you're not ready for the sun. So I've seen a lot of red-looking people walking around, and they are Caucasians. They're not Washington Redskins. All right. This new study is kind of a bombshell study that has gotten a lot of play in the media. Basically, what this study says is that sun-protective sunscreens, even up to SPF 50, do not, I repeat, do not offer you complete protection against skin cancer, in particular deadly melanoma. And it's a little bit of a mixed bag because what the study does not say is don't use sunscreen. The study does not say, oh, it doesn't matter, you can get into as much sun as you want and you still, it won't increase your risk of skin cancer. What the study does say is that even a small amount of exposure to ultraviolet rays can start the process rolling towards skin cancer, melanoma, and other cancers like basal cell cancer, more common, squamous cell skin cancer. These are less deadly, more common, but represent a very, very high percentage of the skin cancers. And in this study, they exposed mice to a single dose of ultraviolet radiation that mimics sunburn, and then they gave them SPF 50 and then continued to expose them to ultraviolet. And what happened was, yes, there was a slight reduction in the skin cancer from the SPF 50, but they did not have an elimination of risk. So the idea is, yes, we need to protect ourselves from the sun, but sunscreen may give us illusory protection. And if you just slather on the sunscreen, stay out in the sun, you still could have additional risk. I prefer to tell people to take nutritional support for the skin, EGCG, vitamin E, astaxanthin. They're actually things that you can use for internal sunscreen, potent antioxidants that help to protect the skin from solar damage. I don't suggest that people stay out of the sun altogether because then you'll have a whopping deficiency in vitamin D. And that's not good either, as we'll talk about in the next hour. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.